Welcome to the Spiritual Lifestyle Podcast, formerly known as Chapters of Motherhood. I'm your host, Veronica Moss, and I've returned with an evolved vision. I'm currently in studio passionately crafting brand new episodes set to officially debut in the spring of 2024. We now focus on promoting spiritual growth in all areas of life, including career, relationships, and mindful parenting. While you're waiting for the new season to kick off, why not revisit some of the classics? We've got your favorite episodes from Chapters of Motherhood lined up for your enjoyment. So sit back, relax, and let the Spiritual Lifestyle Podcast lead you on a journey of self-discovery and growth. Stay tuned. Welcome to your renewed spiritual sanctuary, the Spiritual Lifestyle Podcast. Chapter 27, Montessori Mom. Welcome back to another episode of Chapters of Motherhood podcast. And today we're joined again with Jennifer Garcia. She was with us last week and she came back to talk about her motherhood journey with the child that she birthed and her career as a Montessori teacher. Welcome, Jennifer.
Hello. Thank you for having me back again.
Okay. So last time we talked a lot about you being a sister mom and the story doesn't end there because you actually had a baby who is now 3 years old, but I want to hear all about the relationship with your husband and your pregnancy with her and what you're up to now.
Okay. So pregnancy. So I got pregnant in 2016. So before this, I've always felt as my uterus, you know, like in Mexicans, we call it the matriz caída, like my uterus was dropped. So I had always told my sister, Stephanie, like, hey, my, you know, I need a sobador so I can get a massage and lift it. And because she was the one that knew all these people. So,
can I explain what a sobador is?
Yes, really, please.
Do you want to explain what a sobador is?
I just say a chiropractor slash masseuse. Like, so right. You have better. Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is in the Mexican culture. There is a healer who is basically a cross between a chiropractor and a masseuse. That is well taught on, I guess, muscles and tendons and, you know, internal.
Yeah, the whole body. Okay. They're awesome. Yeah. So there was one day I went to go visit her at her mother-in-law's house. And she's like, hey, you know, there's a sobador coming. You know, he's visiting from Mexico. He's downstairs. Do you want to get a massage? You want to ask him? I'm like, really? Like, should I? Okay. So I asked him. He's like, yeah, sure. So he gave me, you know, my massage, and this was in March. You know, he was like, whoa, it's like really dropped. And, you know, he was like, okay. So then he's like, at the end when, you know, he's like, all right, I got it. It's good. And he was sweating and, you know, he was a tiny guy and I'm pretty tall. Then he asked, he told me, he said, be careful because you might get pregnant, like pretty fast. I'm like, sure, sure. Okay. And I was on birth control at the time. So I'm like, yeah, like, sure. I had one period and then following month and May, I found out I was pregnant, which I was super, super surprised. I'm like, what? Like, and very hormonal at the time. I didn't know what's going on. I didn't know I was pregnant at this time. So I was over at my boyfriend at the time, at his house. And I don't know, the hormones kicked in. I'm like, I saw a picture of him and this girl. I'm like, who is this? Which was a friend. And I knew of his friend, but I'm hormonal. So I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. You're hanging out with girls. And I broke up with him and I was done with him. So I went home, I had the day off. I was talking to my sister, Stephanie, the same one that told me about the sobador. And, you know, she's like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah. She's like, I think you're pregnant. I was like, what do you mean? I was like, you know, yeah, I'm 5 days late, but I'm fine. Like, you know, I've been hanging out with my friends. So I think our periods are syncing together. Mm-hmm. So she advised me, take a pregnancy test. So I did. And sure enough, I found out I was pregnant at home by myself. It was the worst thing ever. And I just felt like, oh my God, like life slapped me in the face. Like you had all these plans, but guess what? You're not going anymore. Like I had this trip planned. And yes, so I didn't believe it. And of course, I called my insurance and like, can I just walk in? You know, the person with a nursing suit tells you like, hey, you know, you're pregnant. Then sounds more realistic than
a pee stick.
Yeah. So I went in just, you know, I'm like, no, it's good. They're going to tell me no, it's not true. And sure enough, they're like, yeah, you're pregnant. Congratulations. So like, congratulations. Like, I'll be a single mom. I just broke up with my boyfriend. Like, you know, like it's just the hormones, like, oh, I don't miss those days. So I remember calling, you know, Gilbert, and he answered, and I'm like, we need to talk. And he's like, what, you want to get back? Like, let's just get back. Like, I don't know what's wrong with you. I'm like, no, I don't want to get back. We need to talk, you know. And he's working in LA. So he's like, and I was in Chino. So, which is about an hour, no traffic. In traffic, just like 3 hours. So he's like, dude, it's like 4 o'clock. I am not leaving right now. Like, what's going on? Just tell me. Like, you need to come over and you need to talk. So long story short, he's like, just tell me. So I told him over the phone, like, I'm pregnant. So he drove.
Did he fall over? Did he fall over and faint at that point?
Almost. It literally, he was very quiet. He wanted to be on the phone, and he drove 3 hours, you know, to my house, and he didn't talk at all. I'm like, are you still there? And he's like, I'm like, okay, like, you know what? I need to take a nap. Like, I'm very tired. I've had such an emotional day. I went through a breakup. Now I'm pregnant. Like, you know, like, I need to take a nap. And he's like, stay on the phone with me, please. Like, so, you know, drove 3 hours on the phone, and I'm just there waiting for him. So we talked, and, you know, it wasn't something we had planned, but, you know, we debated our options, and we're like, all right, we're going to keep her. We're going to do this. Like, we're family. Like, we're going to be a family, you know? So, yeah. So pregnancy was pretty easy with her. Besides, at my 8 weeks, I guess my uterus was retroverted. So I don't know if the sobador had to do anything with it or whatever, but it was retroverted. So it had to switch back into place, which happens, they said, pretty often. So that was a little complication, and I had to be bedridden for like 2-3 days, and that was it. I didn't have much of the morning sickness, and the few times I did, I don't know why they call it morning sickness, because it's not in the morning. It's like the most random time of the day. Yeah, I mean, I was working out at the time, you know, living my life. I was working, and, you know, it was good. I was living, like I said, in Chino. I was living with my husband now. So I was living with my brother, Adrian, the youngest one. So I had him, and yeah, like, I was working, sleeping a lot, and, you know, working out, hanging out with Adrian, and hanging out with my boyfriend at the time. So then at 9 months, I'm like, all right, we're moving in. And like I mentioned before,
months, like at the very end?
Yeah, at the very end, because I wanted to continue working, and my work was closer to my home.
Okay.
And also, so like I mentioned before, I had relinquished guardianship from my brother. So he moved out before like the court date. So my court date was January 12th, and I had my daughter January 11th, so I couldn't go to the court date, but I had to reschedule and so forth, but he wasn't living with me. So I had moved in at 9 months with my husband, started getting everything together. He had his own apartment, so it was like a bachelor pad. So I had to go and just get rid of whatever I didn't want. He was at work, so rearrange whatever I needed. And it was funny because my husband, he had a one bedroom apartment, and he's like, well, you know, I don't think the baby should sleep with us. I think she should sleep in a different room. I'm like, well, what different room? We have no other room. And he suggested, like, let's put her in the living room. And by the way, we live next to LAX by that time, and the LAX airport, which is super busy, super loud. The living room was facing the airport. So I'm like, no way, like, no way. Like, the highway ends there, the 105, like, no. So I'm like, she's going to be in the same room as us. But it's funny because now, I mean, there's times that she sleeps with us, or, you know, she comes to our bed, and I mean, we co-slept for over a year. So it's just funny, like, the transition.
Was he just thinking like, oh, she's just another person, I don't know what to do with her, just put her over there for right now? Or like, what was his thought process on that?
So his thought process was, you know, and I guess like the American way to, you know, handle a baby, you don't pick them up when they cry right away. You put them in the crib, and they learn that they need to, you know, soothe themselves. And we're not there all the time, type of thing. So that was his thought initially, you know, before we had her. And now he's totally completely different. But it was just funny just to kind of look back at that. And throughout this time, and I think pregnancy is just, it prepares the woman because you're carrying the child. And the man, like, they don't feel it. They don't see it. I mean, they see you growing this belly, but they don't really comprehend it, really, I think.
Connected to it.
You know, they're not. No.
They're connected to you. They're connected to their woman, but they're not so much connected to that bump that's growing.
No, and then I remember, I mean, I was very hormonal, very. So I remember like everything that happened, like my belly button popped out at 3 months. And, you know, like anything that, you know, they say like, oh, your hormones will get you darker in certain areas. It got darker, like everything, like I got hairier. Like it was just, I was very hormonal. But he saw like, all right, like she's pregnant. She's total mess. Like I don't even know what's wrong with her. And, you know, she's growing a baby type of thing. So, yeah, there was not a lot of connection with the baby. So, yes, he would go to the appointments. So he lived pretty far, but he would go to all the appointments that he could. He travels a lot. So it would, you know, whenever he could. So, yeah, so 9 months, we were like, all right, let me move in. Got everything ready. I had her maybe like 40 minutes away from where we lived at the time because we wanted to be closer to the family, to his family. He was very close to his grandparents. So his grandparents were really old, like they're older. So we wanted to be close to them. So yeah, so my water broke on January 11th. And I, you know, I was laying down in bed and I'm like, all right, I need to go to the bathroom. It's like 6 a.m. I need to go to the bathroom, but I don't want to get up. You know, like the whole contemplation, like, I don't want to get up. So I just lay down and I felt something. I was like, oh, oh my God, like, could I just pee on myself? And then I, you know, I continued to like kind of leak. So I got up, I went to the bathroom, I checked, and I'm like, all right, this has a little bit, like another consistency. It has, you know, like a little bit of blood, you know, so I'm like, I think this is my water. So I told my husband, he's like, all right, like then this, but we did the whole Lamaze classes, every class that we had, like that was out there, we did it. So we were kind of prepared. We're like, all right, we have a lot of time. Let's just relax and get to the hospital. Yeah, so we showered, got ready, went to have
like that panic time where you're like, ah, let's go.
No.
You were
no.
pretty calm. Okay.
Pretty calm.
Good.
He was calmer than me, which was scary. Like way scary. Like he's like, it's okay, just take a shower. You know, if you want to do your makeup, like do you, and then I had told him, get the car seat ready in the car. And of course, like, yeah, tomorrow. And I wasn't due until January 23rd. So the baby was early. And so he just threw the car seat and the box and all like in the back, you know, he has a truck. So just threw it back there. And yeah, so we went to go have breakfast and it was like a little sit down. Like we had a bagel, like, you know, just some eggs and, you know, just had the whole breakfast, like whatever you want to have, honey, you know, we're going to have a long day. So like I said, very relaxed.
Now, were you still leaking during this time? Were you still leaking fluid? Did you put on like a diaper? What did you do?
Later on I found out that she broke the water from the top. So it was like that fountain leak. So it was just like a little bit. So was it like a gush out? So yeah, like people ask me like, did it gush out? I'm like, no, it was just like a little bit, but it was from the top. So I just put like a pad on and then I had a towel and in a truck because it was a new truck. So it was just, you know, we put the towel in there. But we were there, we're eating, it was close to home. And then we drove to the hospital, showed up around, I think it was around 11. But during labor, I don't know how people do it, but I don't have any concept of time. I think I got there at 11. So, yeah. So.
And were you feeling any contractions or nothing?
No
contractions. Just leaking. Okay.
Just leaking. Yeah. So I felt good. I was like, all right, like, I don't really feel anything, but I guess my water broke, but I wasn't dilated my, you know, like, what is it? Like my cervix was up. I wasn't effaced or anything like that. So they gave me this pill that on the back, it said, do not take if pregnant. I'm like, hello guys. Like I'm pregnant. Like I can't take this, but I guess it's just to thin out your cervix. So I took it and shortly, you know, I started getting the contractions. And before this, I had a birth plan. I wrote out, you know, my whole plan. I had told my doctor, I don't want epidural. I didn't want an IV. I didn't want to be on the bed. I wanted to walk around. And before this, I was contemplating like a natural birth, you know, just a home birth. Mm-hmm. But my husband's an engineer and very scientific. Mm-hmm. And he said, why are we going to do this? You know, it's not safe and whatever. You know, so I had to respect also his opinion. So I did the whole hospital birth. Plus also the home birth, it's not covered by insurance. So you're paying for your insurance. Then on top of that, you're paying for, you know, all this expense. So we're like, no, it's just easier. So we ended up doing the the hospital birth, and I took my ball, I took essential oils, I had a playlist, and, you know, I was supposedly so ready. Nothing. Like, I never even took out my playlist, didn't even rub any oils on me. Like, so
you forgot it all.
Yeah. So after, I mean, I found out after, but Sophia's heart rate would drop. That's my daughter, Sophia. So her heart rate would drop every time I had a contraction. Mm-hmm. So the umbilical cord was wrapped around twice around her neck. So the only way she was, her heartbeat will go up is if I was laying on my left side. So, and of course I didn't want that. I mean, on there, I said, I do not want to be on my bed. So I even asked them, like, can you bring me a rocking chair? Like, I don't want to lay. So they brought me a rocking chair and they would drop. So they're like, I'm sorry. Like, you have to be on the bed. So I had to lay on my left, like literally on my left. And there's time where I'm like, I need to move to my right. And I would move, the heartbeat would drop. So I'm like, all right, let me go back to my left. So I was in labor. Well, I had her at 9 o'clock, but I was in labor for what? I mean, do you count the hours? I mean, the time that it broke, or like when you get contractions? Like,
yeah, I don't. I never know. So
I don't know. Yeah.
I think it's once you start getting the contractions.
Okay. Yeah. So see, like, I mean, I don't even remember what time I got the contractions, though. So, but I had her at 9:01 p.m. that night. But
Did you take any pain medication?
So initially I said no. And then it got to the point where I'm like, you know, I think the monitor in the hospital also psychs you out, because when you see that it's going to go high and high and high, you brace for it. Like, so yeah. I would just start like tightening up. And I remember Gilbert like, relax, calm down. I'm like, I just can't, like, I see it. Like, I wish that it wasn't there. And I don't know if it was just that, but so sorry, tightening up. So the nurse came in. And, you know, they checked me. They're like, oh, your baby, you know, like, she's like, has her eyes, they were like facing out, you know? So every time I had a contraction, I was squeezing her face. So then she started.
Oh, okay. So she was like face presentation?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. So I guess that's the terms. Yeah. So then my nurse started talking to another nurse in my room and started saying like, oh, you know, she might have like face deformity and, you know. And I was like, wait, what? What did you say? You know, like,
oh gosh.
Yeah. So I'm like, what did you say? And I mean, I'm not very vain, but I mean, that's the face. Like, mm-hmm. like, no. I'm like, and this is like a choice that I'm making. Like, there. And so I told him, like, what's going on? Like, well, her face. And they start explaining it to me. So they told me, we recommend a C-section. C-section. Like, this was not on my plans, you know? So they said, but you don't even have an IV. Can't even get epidural, like, you know, so they recommended for me to get the IV. So I got the IV. And then they told me just get the epidural, because once we get the epidural, like, if we need to go have a C-section, we can have it right away, you know, an emergency one. So they did that. They gave me the epidural, and within less than 30 minutes, I guess it just relaxed me and she was ready. So I was pushing her. Yeah. So I had her, like I said, I got the epidural at 8:30, and at 9:01, I had her.
Oh, fast.
Yeah. So it was very, so yeah, I think like second push, she was out. So yeah, so she was born.
Now, when she was born, she presented the face first as she was born.
Not as she was born. She rearranged.
Okay.
Yes. But she did have a little bit of birthmarks, especially when she cried. You know, she got red in the middle of her forehead, her nose, a little bit in her eyes. And, you know, now even if she's cold or she cries, you could see a little dot on her nose, which is cute now, but it wasn't nothing crazy or anything like that.
Right.
Yeah. So she was born, and I knew that I wanted to breastfeed right away. I was that mom where, like, no formula. I don't want to give her formula. And I knew that I was going to be able to take some years off and be a stay-at-home mom. So in that case, I wanted to breastfeed, exclusively breastfed. So, and they tell you, do not introduce a bottle after 30 days. So I listened. And then when we tried to introduce it with the breast milk, she wasn't taking it. She didn't take a bottle. She didn't take a pacifier. She did not want to take anything. So she literally just breastfed the whole time. Yeah. So
she was exclusively breastfed, just like you wanted.
Yeah. But I mean, I guess in the first year it was, you know, you adjust being a mom, you know, mm-hmm. you're just adjusting. And I didn't realize, like, it's so much. Like, I took on her whole life, you know, like, I wasn't doing anything. Like, And there was times where I would tell Gilbert, I'm leaving to the store for 2 hours. Like try giving her a bottle. Like, if I leave, she will take it. Nothing. He would call, like, 30 minutes later. Like, she is crying and dying for you. Like, you need to come back. So I would have to come back, you know. So I was very attached to her. Mm-hmm. And I think also, like, I also didn't want to leave her because, like, I didn't have my mom. So it was like, I felt like I had to overdo it for her. I don't know. But so at the end of the day, she was very attached. And in the first year, I felt like I was the only mother on planet Earth that can take care of my daughter. Like, no other mother could take care of her. So yeah, so she was very attached to me. It, not so much to dad first year. And then eventually I'm like, all right, like, we need to start. Like, this is not healthy for her or for me. So we started a transitional preschool at 18 months, and she was able to go for 2 hours, and it was a school that she had her first birthday there. So it was like a place where she had gone to since she was 5 months, and she knew the teachers, and it was 2 hours drop off, and she transitioned, and now she's very independent. I mean, she's in preschool full time now, so it's easy.
Now, you also extended your breastfeeding with her, right?
Yeah, I'm still breastfeeding her.
You're still breastfeeding her. Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah,
I mean, that's really good for her, for you, for mom and baby bond. But how was that for you? Did you have a plan where you wanted to stop after a year, or did you thought, no, I'm just going to breastfeed her until she's ready to let go on her own?
Okay, so first, once I had her, I'm like, hey, 6 months, I'm breastfeeding 6 months. That was my goal. Then it turned out to be 6 months, and I'm like, oh, she's still little. Like, a year is good. Like, I think a year. So a year, I was like, all right, like, after a year, and then continued on. Like, all right, when she's two, we're stopping. And then now she's three in a month. And we're not stopping, but our situation's a little bit different now. So I'm in, and, you know, like, we're going to talk about it in a little bit, but I'm in San Diego completing my Montessori training. So I'm out there Monday through Friday without my husband. My husband stays in LA, and my daughter and I head out there Monday through Friday. So I have a lot of homework. I have a lot of work, and we share a room. We rent a room out there. So it's just easier, like, to put her down. And then once I put her down, I start working on my stuff. So at this point, I'm not ready to let her go, and she's not either, I think.
Okay. Yeah. You guys are still very bond, very bonded.
Yeah.
But it's not like newborn breastfeeding, right? It's not like every 2 hours. Now it's more transition into how many times a day now?
At night, for sure. If we don't have school and on the weekends, and, you know, in the morning, she's like, oh, I want, you know, milkies. And so she'll have some, but it's just during those two occasions, if she's sick, you know, like, I'll lay with her and, you know, just let her rest. And
so more for comfort.
Yeah, more for comfort. Yeah. But that's pretty much it. Like, it's not, I mean, like I said, she goes to daycare full time. And there's been times that she got sick, and my mother-in-law had to take her for 4 days. And I mean, she didn't breastfeed those 4 days. So she's okay. You know, and she takes her naps at school. And she's fine without it.
Let me ask you this, because with Emily, I was able to breastfeed her for 2 years, and then Grace just gave up after 1 year. And I know that with Emily, I was getting a lot of backlash. Like, a lot of people are like, are you still breastfeeding her? Like, why are you still, you know, do you get that?
No, I don't, but I have it inside my head. Like, you know, like, she got sick one time, and I went to the doctor, and I had, you know, stayed up and pharmacy to get her medicine, and she wanted breast milk, and I am, you know, so forth, like, if she's sick, she needs it, okay, like, and I was embarrassed, and I covered her with my cardigan, and there was these long legs, you know, coming out of, like, my cardigan, that I felt very, very embarrassed. And at that point, I was like, I mean, should I stop? You know, like, what is this? But we still continued. We're still strong.
So, okay, no, that's really good, because I, like I said, if this was coming from family, they would tell me, like, oh my God, are you still breastfeeding her? Do you have to breastfeed her right now? I'm like, yeah, we're eating. If you're eating, she's eating. I'm going to breastfeed her. Get over it.
Yeah.
And, but like I said, she was only up until two. So at 3 years old, I'm just wondering, which is still good. You know, I know that there are some women that will breastfeed all the way until like four and a half. And It's just, are you worried about, like, when you said you were embarrassed, were you worried that someone was going to be like, what are you doing? Or were you just like, oh, you're too old? Like, why were you feeling embarrassed?
I think it's just, if I were to look at it before being a mom, you know, but before being a mom, I was a total different mom. Like, or, you know, even when I had my brothers and sisters, like, I would judge that and then what is wrong with you type of thing. So I guess I have those thoughts in my mind still.
Okay.
So I think that.
But being a mom now, you know, and other moms, like, cause like me, with me, I'm like, oh, that's awesome. That's great that you're able to do it. I'm giving you like a little clapping because I wasn't able to do it. I think society is really accepting of it more. And especially where you're living, like you live in San Diego, they're very accepting of it. You live in El Segundo, LA, they're very accepting of it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's nothing to fear there.
Yeah. And I think also, so I mean, you have to keep in mind, like, I'm not really close to my family and I'm close to my husband's family, but they're very reserved on their thoughts, you know, so they don't really say anything in front of me, you know? So, and if they do, like, I don't really ask them for much. So, I mean, at that point, it's like, what do you like? Thank you for your comments, but you know, like, it's okay. So I do think like one of my aunts and, you know, like kind of says like, oh, she's older already, you know, well, one of our aunts. So,
yeah.
And just like, you know, we'll stop when she wants to, I guess, or we'll see. And I do have some friends who are like, oh, you're still breastfeeding. How long are you going to breastfeed? I'm like, I don't know. It's a hurricane Sinetta. Like, I don't know.
When she goes to college, I'll stop.
Yeah. So,
well, the human body, the human child is supposed to, like, their cycle is about 6 to 7 years old before humanity started introducing cups and things like that, like, you know, mm-hmm. bottles and stuff like that. The human child is supposed to breastfeed about 6 to 7 years old.
It's interesting. See, I just, in my mind, I don't understand how we're okay giving them cow milk for a calf, not for a child, right. But we don't accept it from the mother. Right. So once when I had her, there was something like scientific that clicked to me. We're like, oh my God, like, I'm a mother and like, I just birthed like my child, you know, and I'm making her like her food. It was so, I just feel like if she's connected, I'm connected and you know, it's okay. And I asked my husband, I do, I'm like, is it weird? You know, like, what do you think? And he just tells me like, I mean, I guess if it was a different, like the different child, if I were to see it, I would think it's weird, but he's so used to it and he doesn't mind it. So
right.
I don't mind it either.
Now, let me go back. You said you make her own baby food?
No, my breast. But I tried. Yeah, I tried. You know, I was successful some days and some days I didn't.
Right.
I just, yeah, so and it was okay both ways.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I still breastfeed and...
And how is her personality? I see you with her in person. I see her on social media and I'm like, oh my gosh, this child... She looks like she's just an old soul and mm-hmm. is so much wiser than her age. And mm-hmm. Your Sophia reminds me so much of my Sophia.
That's so funny.
That's why I'm so impressed with her, like by her as well. But her personality really shines through, even through pictures, even through social media in person. She's just like an aura in a person, in a baby.
Yeah, no, it's so okay. So, and I think maybe it has to do with the both Sophia. So I was like very picky when I chose her name because I feel like, you know, I believe in affirmations and whatever you say will come true. And so I'm like, all right, Sophia, I don't know if you know the meaning of it, but it's the Greek goddess of wisdom. Yes. So yeah. So I'm like, all right, this is it. Like, it's a beautiful name. You can pronounce it in Spanish and it's, you know, has a beautiful meaning. Yeah. So she is, I see Sophia. She's awesome. She's very understanding. I can talk to her and she understands things and she picks up things pretty quick. You know, I try teaching her something or showing her things, but I think I tried pretty early on, even if it's like, you know, when it came to breastfeeding, like she wanted milkies. I'm like, okay, like ask for it. And there's times mommy needs a break. Like I need a little break. And, you know, I respect you. You respect me. So it started very, very young. So at this point, she's very respectful. And even this morning when she's playing with dad, she was done. She was like, okay, no more playing. And my husband's still tickling her. He's like, she's Baba. don't tickle me, respect my body. I told you no. So it is the funniest things ever. But yeah, she's very, and she's only three. She just turned three. And she's so adventurous, so brave. Right now my husband took her to this climbing place and she's climbing like towers and, you know, she's just fearless. Mm-hmm. And I love that about her. And I've always, that was my goal, you know, because like I said before in the other episode was that I feel like I grew up with so many just obstacles and a lot of it didn't have to be there. And there were a lot of mental obstacles that like, oh, don't go up there because you're going to fall. So I don't say those type of words to her because if I don't trust her and I am her mother, like, why is she going to trust herself to do it? Okay. So I am very choosy on the words that I use with her. Also, like when it comes to punishing, there's an immediate punishment. Like she breaks something. Okay, well, it's broken. We are going to have to take it away. And she does it. And it's my favorite thing. I'm like, I'm sorry. Like you mistreat it or taking it away. So, and it might be a simple fix, but we take it away right away, put it away. And then she understands, like, if she's going to misuse something, it's going to, you know, it's going to result in it being taken away instead of like, you know, reprimanding her for it, like that type of thing. And yeah, so yeah. I think.
And I also see that you started letting her like cut like food and like help cooking. I think how old was she when she first started? I think like
a year and a half. So she knows how to,
Yeah, I remember seeing that and thinking, oh my God, I don't even let my 9-year-old cut anything. And she was doing it good. Like she was doing it really good. And I thought, oh wow, she's doing a good job at 1.5. And I'm scared to let my 9-year-old do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like I said, like we limit them. Like if we, and this is how I got into Montessori, because Montessori is preparing the environment for the child. The child, like they come along. They already have obstacles. Like everything is up to our height, not their height. So they have all these obstacles already. And we expect them to adapt to our life. But it should be the other way. Like a lot of like what I learned in Montessori, which was fascinating. Like we think of like these, like the people who are the smartest person ever, like maybe like a neuroscientist or something of that sort, right? But it's the child at the age of, you know, like, 0 to 3, they can pick up any language, give them any language and they will pick it up. They start making connections in different ways. So we ask them like, oh, here's all these obstacles and you adapt to me, but you know, we don't really adapt to them. So yeah, so I started learning about like the Montessori method and what it is and so forth. So then I was a teacher. So I was planning to go back to work and I'm like, I would never see her going to a public school. So I started researching. I'm like, well, Montessori. I'm like, but why don't I do Montessori? So I decided to take my training and I'm currently attending the Montessori Institute of San Diego and, you know, and becoming a Montessori guide.
Actually, I never thought of it that way of adapting the world for the child. I never thought of it that way. I've never thought of, you know, oh, because I am that type of like, oh my God, don't do that. You're going to hurt yourself. Mm-hmm. And then, so I'm living like in fear. I guess that's, you know, you grow up like that, right? Like, don't do that. You're going to hurt yourself. Don't do that. You're going to scrape your knee. And then, you know, when it happens, like, oh, see, now I'm mad at you because you actually got yourself hurt. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying not to do that, but I'm still doing it. You know, like right now with Emily has a boot on because she fractured her ankle. And she's fine now. Mm-hmm. She can walk without it. But the doctor said, you know, 3 weeks in the boot. So I'm like, don't walk around without your boot. You're going to hurt yourself. You're going to hurt yourself. And so now I'm thinking like, oh, my God, I'm putting all this. You're going to hurt yourself into her head. And, you know, maybe because I keep saying she's so accident prone, maybe that's why it's all happening because she has that in her head already.
Yeah. So, I mean, it you know, can and cannot, you know, but what I tell Sophia is like, trust your body, you know, and one thing I learned, even like in the Montessori classroom, like if you allow a child to climb a tree, they would only go as high as they are able to. Okay. They won't go any higher. So, you know, like just allowing them to trust themselves, because if you don't let them to trust themselves, then like they're just trusting on your opinion. And, you know, and the way I see my parenting, like, and what I learned from having my brothers and sisters, I was trying to write a story for my brothers and sisters that I wanted for myself. And, you know, I fell short and it's not there. And, you know, there was a lot of disappointment, but it was my view of their life, not their views, you know? So with my daughter, I'm like, no, this is her life. Like, I'm here to support you, whatever you want to do. I am here, but you know, you live your little life and I trust you. So you do it. And sometimes she's like, Mom, can I do this? I'm like, do you think you can do it? Like, do you trust yourself to do it? And, you know, so she does it. She climbs, she jumps, you know, she lives her life.
Oh, well, yeah. And like I said, you can see it. I can see it, how well she does for herself. And I'm like, it's just, I'm in awe of it because it's like, she's so little.
Yeah, no, but it's like I said, their mind, I mean, they're the smartest people walking around. You know, they are. Like, they have all these neurons in their brain that are making connections to things. So like, we also need to be the best example for them. So that way they can become that. I don't know. So you have to let them live through experience. So for example, in the Montessori classroom, everything's made out of glass, or not everything, but most of the things are made out of glass. And that is because if they drop it and they're misusing it, it's going to break. And when they know that it's going to break, then they won't do it again, hopefully. And if they do it again, they'll learn there's an immediate consequence. So you teach them, like, you grab the cup and, like, hey, you hold it with two hands, but you don't, you just demonstrate it. You don't say this, but hold it with your hands, walk around and very slow. And, you know, so I just tell Sophia, like, let me show you. I'll do it first and then it's your turn. So hold it. And I mean, she uses glass. She has everything at home. I have it pretty prepared where she can get her own snacks. Everything's at her height. She has her own water. She has her knives. She can cut stuff. If she wants to make something, you know, with a fire, I have to turn it on for her, but she's pretty independent and, you know, she can deal with by herself on her own and kind of like, okay, I'm hungry, so let me eat this. And so
that's very impressive. What yeah. kind of like crafts or I don't know, like tasks do you have her do?
Okay, so at home, she does have a chore, and it's just emptying out the basket of dirty clothes from the bathroom to the hamper. So, you know, that's her chore. She gets a quarter every time she gets, she does that, and she saved up her money and bought whatever she wants. So I'm not a big fan of candy, you know, not any, and I don't think any mom is, but if she saved up her money, she wanted to buy this $3 lollipop. So you want to buy it? Like, so at that point, I'm like, I have to show her as well that this is her money. She's earning it. So you can buy whatever you want with this. I don't like her buying that lollipop, but whatever. So we took her, she paid. And it's just also teaching them saving in long term. And it might be like, I think there was times that she wanted to buy something that was out of her budget, but she doesn't have the concept of money, so we had to pay extra, you know. But just showing her, so yeah, so she does that. And, you know, just she uses something, she puts it back. I think less is more. Also, like, be choosy on the toys that you have for them. So she has her area where she has her cutting stuff, so she enjoys cutting. So she just gets it. She knows how to set up her little tray and she cuts. And then sometimes she likes to paste things. So she gets her little glue. And like I said, in Montessori, we do a lot of, instead of a large bottle and giving them the whole access to that, I think that's too much. We just get a little container, pour some glue on there, and that they can use anytime. If they need more glue, then they can ask for more glue and they can use it. But they have that small amount of glue that they can use at any time that they want to. So she does that. But I mean, if she's here, she can basically be on her own and I can do at home. I can work, do homework, you know, or so it's pretty simple and easy.
And that's something that also another fear based on my part was not letting them play with scissors. And now I'm kind of paying the price for it because Emily's hands are a little too weak and she needs more therapy on fine motor skills. And me trying to make sure that everything's easy for her, I'm actually kind of, I held her back because now she needs therapy to strengthen her hands. And the same thing with the monkey bars, going back to, you know, not trusting her. I didn't want her to be on the monkey bars because she's going to fall. And so now they're saying, you should get her on the monkey bars. You should give her scissors. You should give her, you know, beans to play with. And I'm like, but when I was little, I stuck a bean up my nose and that was a really bad situation. And
but you do it once and do they happen again?
Well, that's like, true. It didn't happen again. It was such a bad situation. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that, you know, a lot of my parenting that I'm starting to notice is still fear-based.
Mm-hmm.
And what can you advise me on how to change this? A mom of five. Oh. Please advise me.
Like I said, adjust your house to them. Have shelves where they can reach things themselves. And if they want scissors, have them do scissors. I mean, they're so my Montessori is from 3 to 6 years old. So, I mean, they're a little bit out of range for that, but start giving them that. So when we welcome new children to our classroom, we give them a lot of practical life, which is a lot of pouring, a lot of scooping, cleaning. And, you know, like that's when they say like, oh, Montessori, they just have them clean and do all these things. But that it's so crucial because it develops those fine motor skills. Not only that, like when you give a presentation of something in Montessori, there's a lot of steps to it. So you start them with something small where they start pouring from water to from a pitcher to one pitcher or then a pitcher to one glass. And then, but you teach them like how to clean it and how to put it back. And even like those 3-4 steps of you pouring it, cleaning the spout, putting it back and putting it back on the shelf and holding it right teaches them the sequential steps. And then you increase that with more difficult things later on. So that one of the most difficult tasks that we have in the classroom as well is washing the table, and it prepares the hand. So we use a brush. And we, you know, water and soap, and we have them wash the table. But that develops the child to write because they're holding the brush and in big circles, they're cleaning this table, you know, and the perimeter around the perimeter and then in between the middle of it. But it refines those muscles that they have in their hand. That way later on, when they start writing, they're able to write. So I would increase practical life. And in practical life, you don't need Montessori. You could do it in your own home. Start like cutting, and there's children knives now, and that's what Sophia uses, and she cuts her own stuff and have her help, you know. And with Sophia, when she cooks, it's for me, when I cook a egg, it goes straight to the pan. For Sophia, it goes into a bowl and then it goes to the pan, which is a lot more cleaning, but it gets them to do things.
Okay. Yeah, no, I get it.
So wow. Yeah, so it's, yeah, there's a, so that's the reason I chose Montessori. It teaches the child as a whole. So Maria Montessori was a doctor before in the 1800s. And she pitched this method. And she learned it from volunteering in a insane hospital with kids who were, these were the terms back then, but they were retarded. And they were not able to do anything for themselves. So she went there and she's like, well, it's a cold room. It's dark in here. There's nothing for them to play with. Like she saw children playing with crumbs on the floor and eating the crumbs, but they had nothing. So then she developed this method where like, how about if we adjust to them, we adapt to them. So she started giving them all these things, and these children who were taught, you know, who said like they're incompetent, they can't do things for themselves, started learning how to write, how to do math, and how to do all these different things just because she changed the environment. Yeah. So, I mean, just follow the child, follow her, see like what does she want? What does she want to do? And trust her. She knows.
Yeah. That's true. Mm-hmm. I think it's more about me as a parent, trusting them as the child to figure it out.
You know, it's hard because I think it might be harder for you. So I didn't talk about this on the other episode, but the reason that I was so disciplined was because I had the Catholic Church. Right. And I loved it. You know, that was the discipline I had, but it's also very fear-based. Mm-hmm. If you don't do this, you're going to go to hell. And, you know, all these things that bad stuff can happen, which, you know, it served a purpose back in the day. And now I'm not Catholic, but I feel like, you know, we were raised around that and it's very hard to let go of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think your mom was very heavy in the church, and I think she still is, that you have it more inscribed in you.
Yes. Yes, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a lot of like changing yourself to view things differently.
Right. Not to be so fear-based.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else that you want to talk about or bring awareness to?
I think just follow the child. I mean, they're so like, they have a will. Like we in Montessori, we say like, have them build the will, like of them wanting things. Like we don't ask them like, hey, you have to share because you know, they're sharing everything in the classroom. There's only one of those items, and they develop that will to learn. So not to praise so much like, oh, you did something good. Yay. No, like they have their will that they're inside, they're satisfied already. So just follow that. Follow that with the child. Let them explore and be themselves. And, you know, I think for me, my biggest thing is that I'm not here to shape my daughter. I'm just here to see her grow and, you know, provide the assistance that I can for her to be a resilient, strong woman later on in the future. So
oh, that sounds great. Mm-hmm. Do you have like a title of parenting style?
I guess, I mean, I try to be mindful. I mean, I've taken like after having her and before, mindful parenting classes and groups and that I've attended and so forth, but try to be mindful, but also there's no one way of parenting. You know, I have to mold it to us and our situation. And there's, I don't like her watching TV, but then there's times that I come home and I really need to get some stuff down. So, you know, she watches TV, but you know, you do whatever comes to you. Like for me, you know, and I just have to let go of that judgment, you know, but okay. That's it.
Okay. And then is there like a book or a website or something that you would recommend for people that want to learn more about Montessori?
I definitely recommend The Absorbent Mind. So that was a book that Maria Montessori wrote, and it talks about even obedience, the child, and it's an absorbent mind because she describes the child's mind as a sponge. They'll absorb dirty water or clean water, whatever situation you put them in, they'll absorb it. So, and this happens from ages 0 to 6. So I definitely would recommend something, you know, that book. And I mean, there's so much stuff out there. Yeah.
I think there's also podcasts out there as well. I know I subscribe to them and I haven't even listened to them, but there's also podcasts out there. So The Absorbent Mind, that's a good one. Okay. Is there anything else?
There's podcasts out there. There is a good Instagram mom that I listen to, and she's super awesome with her daughter. I don't have it on me, but if you want, I can email it to you later so you can put it on your show notes. There's a mom that she does. I mean, she inspires me. I feel like I do very little compared to her.
Yeah. Well, you're doing very great things from what I can see. I think you're doing really good.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Jennifer. I know that this, you know, making time for 2 episodes was a lot, and I do appreciate you making the time for it. I know you spent some time away from husband and baby, but I do appreciate it so much. If my audience wants to reach out to you, is there a social media that you would be comfortable sharing?
Yeah. So Instagram at Jen _FER. So Jennifer, you can reach me there. And then I can also give it to you. That way you can put it on your show notes as well.
Yeah, I'll definitely link it on the show notes. Well, thank you so much, Jen.
Thank you, Veronica. Thank you for having me.